who lives in a pond and loves to tell stories. This story is an adventure by Marlene Werfel called The Changeling. Once upon a time, in a castle far away, on a windy bluff overlooking damp cliffs and treacherous, churning waters, in a kingdom known chiefly for its oatmeal production, in which the king and the queen were the most knowledgeable the world over about the history, production, consumption, and trade of oatmeal, so much so that they'd read every book there was to read about oatmeal or relating in any way to oatmeal, and were, in fact, deeply absorbed in writing a book whose working title was A Treatise on the Historical, Contemporary, and Projected Growth, Production, and Global Trade of Oatmeal with Unillustrated Appendices. They worked on the book all their waking hours, except, of course, those in which they were enjoying oatmeal or relaxing in their study with the princess while drinking hot water and reading scholarly journal articles as a break from the hard work of writing and as a way to spend quality time with their insightful, courageous, and intelligent daughter. They did so between 7:15 p.m. and 7:55 p.m. nightly. Their kingdom was the most organized in all the world, with every person existing within its boundaries having a clearly prescribed role with clearly described duties defined not only to each and every hour, but to each and every minute, the minutiae of which were recorded in a library for that purpose. It was affectionately known as the Hefty Volumes, as it held the 398 hefty books in which the minute-by-minute roles and responsibilities of each functionary, dignitary, servant, and inhabitant of the kingdom were laid out. The roles and responsibilities of the girl whose job was the preparation and service of oatmeal, and the boy whose job was the preparation and service of oatmeal, included, for example, awakening at 5:48 a.m. each morning and then immediately performing a toilette de matin, including brushing their teeth with 28 brush strokes at 5:51 a.m., and combing their hair with two types of combs, one for detangling, the other for styling at 5:53 a.m., folding their night clothes first in half, then in thirds, then in quarters before placing them under their pillows at 5:55 a.m., and then being ready and in their oatmeal preparation uniforms and aprons so that they had time to scrub their hands with a powerful and economical soap using a precise and hygienic method for exactly 4 minutes beginning at 5:56 a.m., so that at precisely 6 a.m., when a clarion bell rang throughout the kingdom, signaling the beginning of another day of the production, consumption, and trade of oatmeal, they were ready to prepare and serve the oatmeal. Lest you think their days were colorless or drab, like the gray porridge they prepared and served daily, or the gray stockings and aprons they wore to do so, or the gray stone castle walls that towered around them, or the gray clouds that perpetually hung over the windy bluff upon which the castle was perched, I should also tell you that besides just the 6 a.m. oatmeal service and the 11:30 a.m. oatmeal service and the 6 p.m. evening oatmeal service, the boy and girl whose job was the preparation and service of oatmeal were also in charge of cleaning up afterwards. They were also in charge of bringing hot water to the king, queen, and princess in their study, and they also had the duty of picnicking daily in the rose garden courtyard with the princess between 1 and 2 p.m., and going for a walk around the castle perimeter if the weather was deemed fair enough every day from 2:15 to 3:15 p.m. for the purpose of taking exercise. There was never a single day that the weather was not deemed fair enough by the princess when they stepped outside the castle walls. In fact, it seemed that is exactly when the sun would burst through the gloom and begin to shine on the children as they ran through the grasses and wildflowers. The boy and girl whose job was the preparation and service of oatmeal, as well as the serving of hot water, picnicking in the courtyard, and the taking of daily exercise with the princess, knew each other very well, as you might imagine, because they spent every day together and had since they could remember. Besides that, they'd been through two great adventures together. The first was that one dark and stormy night when there was a knock at the castle door, and a woman who claimed to not be a princess, but asked for shelter from the storm and a huge stack of mattresses to sleep on, turned out to actually be... Well, you probably wouldn't believe me if I told you. I won't bother. And then there was that adventure when the girl discovered a young woman and a golden spindle barricaded in a secret room in the castle, and it turned out that... Well... You probably wouldn't believe that either. Suffice it to say, the ending of that adventure resulted in the arrival of the princess, who now ran with the boy and girl whose job was the preparation and service of oatmeal, around the castle walls, through the waving grasses and flowers, her legs getting longer and stronger each day, until she was just about to overtake the boy and girl with whom she ran daily in speed and endurance, but before she could, she stopped suddenly short. She threw herself upon the ground before a twisted, leaning oak tree, and she exclaimed, "What in the gray kingdom is that?" "What is what?" asked the boy, whose job was the preparation and service of oatmeal. "I don't see anything unusual." "Why, that!" exclaimed the princess, and she pointed to a tiny wooden door at the base of the tree, barely visible, as it was covered in moss and very nearly the same sun-bleached and wind-blasted gray as the bark of the oak. But it had an ornate silver doorknob and a golden knocker with a golden bell attached, no bigger than your pinky fingernail, and a tiny sign that said in tiny lettering, "Don't bother knocking, ringing, or entering. This is not a fairy portal to another magical world." "Let's ring it," said the princess and the girl at the same time. "Let's not," said the boy. "It says not to. It says it's not what it appears to be." This was precisely when the girl whose job was the preparation and service of oatmeal, as well as the serving of hot water and picnicking with the princess and taking daily exercise with her, noticed that something was amiss with the boy whose job was the preparation and service of oatmeal, as well as the serving of hot water and picnicking with the princess and taking daily exercise with her too. She could absolutely tell that he was arguing with the princess and the girl, not because he enjoyed arguing, as she knew him too, but because his usual spark was gone, maybe just dulled, hopefully not extinguished. There was only one rational explanation. This tiny door was, in fact, a fairy portal to another magical world, and some fairy creature had come through it and for some reason, somehow, stolen the real boy whose job was the preparation and service of oatmeal and replaced him with this other, duller version of himself. "Right," said the girl to the boy. "It clearly says it's not what it appears to be, so... let's not knock or ring. What a waste of time it would be to find out what would happen if we did. And what if it made us late for the preparation and service of oatmeal?" "Exactly," said the boy, but with no flash of victory or righteousness in his eyes. "We mustn't risk being late for the preparation and service of oatmeal just because we might want to find out what would happen if we knocked." "What madness," said the princess. "Of course we should knock on the door and find out what happens when we do." The wind blew her hair around her intelligent face, her cheeks aglow with exertion and fresh air, her eyes afire with curiosity. "I'm knocking." But when the princess went to lift the tiny knocker, which would set the tiny bell ringing, it was gone. All gone. Nothing remained, not even the sign that said, "Don't bother knocking, ringing, or entering. This is not a portal to another magical world." There was just the twisted bark at the base of the twisted gray oak, bent in the direction that the wind blew over the turbulent, churning waters against the gray bluffs upon which the gray castle sat. "Wait, what?" said the princess. "Where did that little door go?" "None of our concern," said the boy. "Come on now, princess and girl whose job is the preparation and service of oatmeal. It is 2:58 p.m. and certainly time to return to the castle." As the boy and girl returned to the kitchen to begin the evening preparation and service of oatmeal, the girl watched the boy. He did everything just like he normally did. He measured the oats from the linen bag in the oatmeal pantry onto the silver scale with the silver scoop. He set the kettle to boil and he added a pinch of salt to the pot. Nothing unusual at all. But instead of setting the trays upon which the oatmeal was to be served to the king and queen and princess, with a small glass of mineral water, a single orange sea buckthorn berry in a crystal berry dish, a linen napkin with a silver spoon on it, a dish of oatmeal on a saucer, and a pitcher of buttermilk on the side, the girl set the trays with a small glass of mineral water, a linen napkin with a silver spoon on it, a dish of oatmeal on a saucer, and a pitcher of buttermilk on the side, and a single orange sea buckthorn berry in a crystal berry dish on the far side of that. It was, of course, a cunning trap. The girl was careful. She didn't make mistakes, such as putting the berry dish on the wrong side of the tray. The boy, had he been quite himself, would have known the error was intentional, and he would have wished to discover why. He'd have been outraged at this subterfuge. But this dull-eyed thing that had replaced the real boy, whose job was the preparation and service of oatmeal, didn't react at all. He simply caught and corrected the mistake, moving the crystal berry dish to the correct placement on the tray. He did not show a glimmer of shock or outrage. He did not attempt to point out to the girl that she had made a mistake which he had had to correct. Not the boy whose job is the preparation and service of oatmeal that I've known my entire life, noted the girl. Then, as they paused behind the gray velvet curtain that separated the oatmeal preparation area from the oatmeal service area, and waited for the servant whose job was to open gray velvet curtains to open the gray velvet curtains before they could move through with their trays of oatmeal service, the girl whispered to the boy, "Let's not return to the same oak tree at the same time tomorrow to search for the magical portal to another magical world. I mean, who cares if it's there or not? Right?" And the boy responded, "Right. Agreed." And she could tell he meant it. "Waste of time," he furthered, with a disinterested nod. "Not the boy I've known my entire life, indeed." And she knew she had to get to the bottom of whatever was going on. She knew she had to help him. That evening, the girl brought a cup of hot water to the king, queen, and princess as they read historical books in their study, with the princess's great Pyrenees dog warming himself by the fire at the princess's feet. And the girl noted that while the king was reading a scholarly article titled "Various Paper Qualities Used in Book Production and Their Effect on Reader Perceptions of Authority, a Qualitative Reader Response Study," and the queen was reading "Bookbinding Glues for Damper Climates, A People's History," the princess was reading "Magical Portals, How to Find and Enter Them to Discover Magical Other Worlds and Hidden Realms." "Good book?" asked the girl, setting a cup of hot water down beside the princess. "Very," said the princess. "Tomorrow let's take our exercise on horseback, shall we?" The next day, after the girl had changed from her picnicking uniform to her taking exercise with the princess uniform, she found the princess waiting just outside the castle walls for her, astride a great gray mare, and speaking to the servant whose job was saddling gentle horses and helping inexperienced riders get onto horses, as well as giving them some basic instruction on how to communicate with the horse about going left or right, faster or stopping. He helped the girl onto a palomino pony, but the boy, whose job was the service and preparation of oatmeal, refused. "It is nowhere in my job description," he said, "that I should ride a pony. Why would I want to?" "Well, it's not forbidden," said the princess. "The hefty volumes only say you're to take daily outdoor exercise with me, the princess, if the weather is deemed fair enough, and that you're not to lose me. Doesn't say how we're to get exercise. It doesn't say we need to be on foot." "In that case, I will take my exercise today by walking to the hefty volumes and consulting the rules there and discussing with the servant whose job is adding more rules to the rules that are already there about what types of exercise should be permitted and which should not in their official rules." "Giddy up," cried the princess, and she and the girl left the boy behind, and upon their galloping horses they leaned into the exhilarating wind. and it wasn't long until they'd reached the highest point on the castle bluffs, where they had a view of the whole kingdom from the churning waters to the drab grasses clinging to the wind-blasted cliffs, to the woods that leaned away from the northeasterlies that whipped and raged on stormy nights, and that gusted and blustered on calm ones. "Look for swarming dragonflies or owls circling a tree canopy," said the princess. "There," said the girl, pointing to an oak with a wide green canopy with four barred owls circling above it amidst a swarm of dragonflies. Their wings refracted the sunlight so that it appeared as if the tree was twinkling and glittering. They galloped to the tree. They hopped down from their horses and sure enough discovered another tiny fairy door, moss-covered and weather-worn, with a single golden bell and knocker and a sign that said, "Go away, no portal here." The princess took a bottle of potion out of her gray velvet riding cape, which was labeled Bigger, and she sprinkled the Bigger potion on the tiny door, and it grew bigger. Then she took the knocker and knocked hard, which made the bell ring. There was no answer, but after waiting a respectful amount of time, she knocked again, and then, when still nobody answered, she turned the ornate silver doorknob and pushed open the door. The doorway was made bigger by the potion, but it was still not particularly big, so she got down into an army crawl, and she inched her upper body through the doorway. "Hello," she called, half in and half out of the fairy door, and she continued to inch her way in until the girl was worried that she was quite stuck. But before she could offer assistance to the princess, she was interrupted by a voice. "You've broken the rules," said the boy whose job was the preparation and service of oatmeal. The girl whose job was the preparation and service of oatmeal turned toward the sound, and there he was, standing with a servant whose job was revising the policies and protocols pertaining to rules and responsibilities, as well as a servant whose job was making addendums to policies and protocols in the great rule books, and the servant whose job was providing memoranda to those whose roles and responsibilities were affected by revisions to the policies and protocols. "The rules forbid riding horses as a way of taking exercise now," said the servant, whose job was revising the policies and protocols. "Here's the memo," said the servant, whose job was providing memoranda to those whose roles and responsibilities were affected by revisions. And he handed it to the girl. The girl, whose job was the preparation and service of oatmeal, was terribly upset to think she'd broken a rule. But the princess said, "Oh, for heaven's sake. The only important rules are to get exercise and to not lose the princess while doing so. The rest is nonsense, and I'll make sure an addendum to the addendum is made to reverse that silly rule." "At least we haven't lost the princess," said the girl, her face brightening. But when she gestured to the princess, where she expected to find her, stuck partly in and partly out of the fairy door in the tree, the princess was gone. So were the owls that had been circling overhead and the dragonflies, and so was the door and the tiny sign that said, "Go away, no portal here." There was only the twisted old oak, no magic doorway, no princess. The servant in charge of gasping in horror, gasped in horror. So did the girl. The boy just looked smug. "Now let's see, what do we do now?" said the servant in charge of servants who had broken the rules, wringing his hands and quite flustered, as no servants had ever broken a rule before in the Grey Kingdom. "I'll summon help," said the servant in charge of summoning help. "I'll sound the alarms," said the servant in charge of sounding the alarms. And all around the Grey Kingdom, the bells of alarm rang, and a damp fog rolled in, and the king and queen stopped writing their book, and they began instead to fret and worry. And the boy in charge of the preparation and service of oatmeal just kept preparing and serving oatmeal. He didn't miss a beat. The girl, however, was no longer in charge of serving and preparing oatmeal. Instead, she was locked in a high tower where she could weep with remorse for the rest of her days. And so she wept, and nothing changed for several days. The princess didn't resurface, but on the fourth day, as the girl gazed weeping out at the gray fog that hung over the gray castle, a tiny green light, a tiny red light, and a tiny blue light came shimmering towards her. She blinked, thinking she must be imagining things as the little lights disappeared in and out of the gray fog. But they got brighter and closer and brighter and closer until they landed on the windowsill of the high castle tower and she could see. It was three little fairies. "You're the girl whose job is the preparation and service of oatmeal," said the green fairy. "I was," said the girl. "Now I am the girl who will weep with remorse locked in a castle tower for the rest of my days." "We're so glad to have found you," said the blue fairy. "We are on a mission to rescue the boy whose job is the preparation and service of oatmeal. I'm afraid the boy you've known for the past several days is a changeling."
"I knew it," gasped the girl.
"Wait, what's a changeling?"
"Changeling magic is outlawed in the realm of fairies," said the red fairy.
"It's when a fairy steals a human child and makes a copy of him. Then the fairy keeps one copy of the child and puts the other copy back where he found it so that nobody notices that only half the child is there, and the other half has been stolen. But neither copy is like the original. They look the same, but they have even less than half the spark and spirit. They're dull children who can do chores, but they can't play or grow or be free. And that's what happened to your friend."
"But why would a fairy steal a boy who serves oatmeal?" asked the girl.
"Oh, he's a rogue fairy, and he's stolen the boy so that he has someone to make oatmeal for him. He hates making his own oatmeal. But it's not right, it's not lawful, and we will right his wrongs and prevent him from entering this realm ever again. We'll return the princess to you as well. Fairies are sworn to protect, never harm children. We just need the key."
"Which key?" asked the girl.
"The key to the oatmeal storage pantry," said the fairy.
"Whatever for?"
"It's where the rogue fairy made the original portal. If we seal that up, he won't be able to get back through again." The girl patted her apron looking for the key, but then realized she was wearing her exercising with the princess uniform, not her oatmeal preparation uniform.
"Oh no, I don't have it. It would have been returned to the servant in charge of keys. He would keep it locked in the library of keys."
"We can fly in through the window and take the key, but how can we know which key is the one to the oatmeal pantry?" asked the fairies.
"Oh, I know it like the back of my hand," said the girl whose job was the service and preparation of oatmeal. She closed her eyes, and she drew the exact outline of the key in the air with her finger, and the fairies threw some fairy dust at her, drawing in the air, and it turned into a real drawing on parchment, and they rolled it up and told the girl that she could stop weeping, that she'd be back picnicking in the rose garden courtyard by the next day. "Probably you should get some sleep." Well, when the three fairies flew off, the girl felt much less like weeping, but she still hardly felt like sleeping or staring out at the gloom. So instead, she stared at the gray walls of her tower cell until, before her very eyes, a message appeared in fairy dust on the walls. "Get bigger potion," it said.
"I must go to the servant in charge of potions at once," thought the girl. And then she remembered that she was locked in the high tower cell. But just then, she heard a whirr of fairy wings. She saw a glow of green fairy light through the keyhole, then heard a click, and a key dropped to the ground, and the cell door swung open just a crack. Well, the girl ran down the tower stairs, past the rose garden courtyard, past the kitchens, past the great hall, past the stables, past the menagerie, and past the moats, to the apothecary, where the servant in charge of potions was pouring something fizzy into something glowing.
"I need bigger potion," she said.
He gestured, without looking up, to a wall containing many bottles labeled bigger, and the girl took two.
What now? She wondered.
And then she remembered about how the fairy said there was a portal in the oatmeal pantry. Back over the moats and past the menagerie, past the stable, past the great hall and through the kitchens, the girl ran. The door to the oatmeal pantry was ajar. She looked inside, and where a sack of oatmeal usually sat was a fairy door. She knew what she needed to do. She poured a jar of bigger potion on it and squeezed through. She saw a tiny fairy world with tiny trees and tiny mountains and tiny fairy cottages with tiny fairy furniture and tiny fairy gardens.
Then she heard a tiny voice calling, "Here, over here, help us." And she saw the princess and the boy whose job was the preparation service of oatmeal on the other side of a tiny but turbulent river. They were trying to build a raft from tiny fallen branches from tiny fairy trees. They were exactly for sure the boy and the princess she knew, but tiny, like the fairies who landed on her windowsill. She reached out her arm toward them and laid her hand flat down over the treacherous waters of the tiny river, and they scrambled up onto her fingers and onto the flat of her hand. "We are saved! Through the portal to home," commanded the princess in her tiny voice. So the girl cupped her friends gently in her huge hands, and she squeezed back through the portal into the oatmeal pantry. And when she looked back, she saw red and blue and green glowing light fill the outline of the fairy door, and a sign appeared in fairy dust that read, "Forever sealed," and then it all disappeared. The girl set the tiny boy and the tiny princess down on a table, usually reserved for the service and preparation of oatmeal, and she picked up the second bottle of bigger potion and she poured it on her friends. They grew bigger and bigger until they were quite exactly their usual size, and they had to jump down off the table before bumping their heads on the pantry ceiling as they grew. "Thank you so much for the rescue," said the princess. "I knew we'd get things back to normal." "I'm not sure I remember all that happened," said the boy. "It's fuzzy. But I feel very strongly that tomorrow we should take our exercise on horseback. What do you think?"